You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. He is taking another personal day, and frankly, for a couple shows this week, and we have a really fun week ahead of us. We have some great guests lined up as the week goes along, so keep an eye out for that. As always, you can find the show on Megaphone, Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Today's show, I went to the iTunes reviews to see if anybody had any ideas on what to talk about and any questions that they would like answered. As always, the absolute best way to guarantee that something that you want to hear about makes the show is to leave us a 5-star review, put your question in there, and I promise at some point we will get to it. So, and then after I answer these couple questions, I have a conversation with David Locke, who runs the Locked On Network. We had a great conversation. He watched the Lakers up close and personal on Saturday night. He is the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. And he had some interesting and positive thoughts about the Lakers. I think he likes where the Lakers are heading. And you know, the Jazz aren't a great matchup for the Lakers because of the way they play and because of Rudy Gobert. But he said he likes what the Lakers showed him that night. So that's a fun conversation. That'll be after the break in a second. First question or first iTunes review is subject line, please stop talking about LeBron with 5 exclamation points. I can't promise you that. I can't promise that we won't stop, or that we won't keep talking about LeBron because of the stuff that LeBron does to make sure he continues to get talked about, especially out here in Los Angeles. Wishing Lonzo Ball a happy G-Day and all of those good things. So the subject line is, please stop talking about LeBron, but we probably won't, so I'm sorry. But the question, I love the show, but you guys did like 10 episodes of LeBron coming to LA over the summer. I know I'm not the only Laker fan that hates LeBron and don't want him in a Laker uniform. So here's the thing. He is still, despite his age and despite the ridiculous number of minutes he's played and despite the crazy workload that he's had to deal with over the course of that insane career and even somehow more insane number of NBA minutes that he's played, he's still the best Laker, or he's best, Freudian slip, he's still the best NBA player breathing. He's still the best basketball player breathing, despite what Giannis is doing out there in Milwaukee, despite what Kevin Durant is doing up north with Golden State. He is still, when he wants to turn it on, the best talent in the NBA. And the entire point of making a team and trying to have them compete, especially against those Golden State Warriors, is to get as many really good players in the same place at the same time as you possibly can. And then you try to work out minutes and rotations and all of those other roles and all of those other things as you figure things out. But If you want to make the best team that you possibly can and you turn away LeBron because of some weird pseudo-rivalry that Laker fans seem to have with him because he had the gall to get better than Kobe at some point in his career, then you're shooting yourself in the foot. Because if he wants to come to Los Angeles, and he looks like he keeps sending signals out there that at the very least he wants to keep people thinking that he's interested in coming to Los Angeles. So if he wants to come and you tell him no, then you're just not doing your job very well. So I've tried to keep things and keep expectations at a low point with regards to LeBron, because a lot of things have to fall in line with each other for it to actually work out and him to actually wear a Laker uniform. But as of right now, if he wants to be a Laker, and I were to find out that Magic said, no, we don't want you to be a Laker, Magic should be fired immediately. Next iTunes review comes from J. Blake Boogie. This is a fun one. A bit of a tin hat conspiracy idea, but interested to hear your thoughts. Maybe Julius Randle is getting less playing time this season because the front office is trying to lower his value league-wide before he hits restricted free agency. That way, they can bring him back next year on a bargain contract with whoever players they sign with their 2018 cap space. My thoughts. All right, so my thoughts are it is a tin hat conspiracy theory. It's not a bit of one. It's an actual one. But I don't think they would do that to Randle. It's just a bad precedent to set because then you're going to have agents across the league aware of the fact that you put your own interests ahead of those of somebody who you're supposed to have a partnership with, right? Teams and players aren't the normal, you know, employee-employer relationship. They're partners in this. Without the players, there is no NBA. Whereas without owners, the players in the NBA could probably set up a league. It might not be as immediately successful as the NBA currently is, but they could always go somewhere else and build their own league. So if you show people and you show players and you show agents that you're willing to intentionally and explicitly lower somebody's value by limiting their opportunity, that doesn't go over well with the rest of the NBA. The other thing here is that by doing that, you are not playing probably one of your most talented players, and you're hurting your team in that sense. So not only would you be rubbing Julius Randle, his agent, and arguably the entire rest of the NBA the wrong way, but you're probably ticking off your own team because they're saying, wait, this guy helps us win and he isn't out here playing just so that you can keep him cheap in the offseason. That probably wouldn't go over very well in the locker room. All right, so let's talk to David, though. This is a really fun conversation. I always enjoy talking to David. His analysis is up there with anybody else who talks about the NBA at large. So enjoy this. We'll be back at it again tomorrow with, I believe, another really good guest that I think everybody will enjoy talking to. All right, I'm joined now by my boss, David Locke. How are you doing, David?
Ah, it's such an unfriendly way to start the show.
I used to do that. I used to bug when I worked at Silver Screen. I used to bug Drew with that kind of entrance, so I kind of wanted to see how you would handle it. So.
Yeah, I don't really like that. How about the person who's just doing way a lot of work for this network and hopefully so everybody else can and have success with it?
Yeah, so I'll say, and now I'm joined by the guy who makes my life as easy as he possibly can, David Locke.
Which is probably only slightly, you know, which is only variable easy. So.
Well, you keep making me work with Harrison. So like at some point, you know, I might have to say enough is enough there.
I actually don't know that you work together. I think I've never been on with both of you at the same time.
It's not a coincidence. I don't like to let him talk to other people. I get nervous because he's kind of awkward.
Yeah, it happens. and that's even without looking at him.
All we need to do is make a draft joke, and we got the triple play.
There we go.
So we're gonna talk. The Lakers are about to play the Jazz, and I always like talking to you because I respect your basketball analysis. How do you feel about the Lonzo Ball stuff so far this season?
So I mean, it was interesting last night when we saw him, and I have Ron Boone, who's a former Laker and Jazz player, has been in the league for 50 years, and Thurl Bailey on my show at different points. So both of them seemed very impressed by him, and both talked about just his calmness and his how he looked. I thought he looked tired last night, or whenever we air this. So I saw him last night on Saturday, but I thought, you know, that was interesting to me that both these two guys who as pros watch the game and they both saw this calmness and this understanding of tempo and this collectiveness to what they were doing. There was one play that really concerned me, and this is just basically reiterating my only concern I've had on him the whole time, and that is that wonky shooting motion just isn't going to work in the NBA. And there was a play that happened, I think, third or fourth quarter where if I remember correctly, the Lakers got one of their 1 million offensive rebounds they had there for a period of time, kicked out to Ball on the right wing. It was a shot that an NBA player has to get off, and frankly, an NBA player actually might have to make. And Joe Ingles closed, and you could see him have to rush the tempo of that shot, and he missed it pretty badly. And that's the only concern that I have on him right now, is just that his shooting window might have to be excessively large to get shots off in the league, and that's not great. No. Otherwise, not real worried about it, and I would say if you look at all the rookies, whether it's Kyle Kuzma or Alonzo Ball or Donovan Mitchell or whomever else, Markelle Fultz doesn't count because he won't shoot, but the on regards to all of them, they're above the break three-point shooting in the opening weeks of the season is terrible. And so that's just because the game's faster and the distance is longer, and so I wouldn't worry about that at all.
Yeah, I would agree on the shot. The thing that worries me about the shot is he jumps really far forward. It's one thing, it looks weird in and of itself because he shoots from the wrong side of his body, but I've noticed as the season went along, or as I've seen more and more of his shot, is that he needs a lot of space to shoot just because he launches himself forward. And that's not great because in the NBA, I mean, Joe Ingles is no... It could be one thing if Rudy Gobert was the one closing out on him and you had all that length to worry about, but Joe Ingles shouldn't freak somebody out when he's closing out on him. And I know the play that you're talking about, and it was painfully obvious that either he needs to stop shooting and lunging forward the way he does, or he might need to completely rethink his shot. And we've seen how that's worked out for Markelle Fultz because they tried to retool his shot, and he's out indefinitely now because I think his agent at one point said them rethinking his shot hurt his shoulder, which is insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot going on there, so I'm not quite sure what.
Yeah.
What's happening there, and probably inappropriate to speculate on some of those issues.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other side, though, is that Joe Ingles, who is shooting 54% from three and was third in the league last year in three-point shooting, had to rework his shot a little bit because it was too slow and has really changed and developed a quick-release catch-and-shoot three that he uses. And so it is very doable, and Lonzo has a touch. So, the only thing I think is insane that we do to all these guys, and, you know, our fans are doing it today over Donovan Mitchell, like, he's going to be an all-star. Like, okay, well, a week ago, he was, like, not going to make the league.
Yeah.
And I think there's a chance that Lonzo Ball is Ricky Rubio, not Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's an outlandish comment. Like, being a starter in the NBA is really hard. And being an all-star in the NBA is really, really rare.
What's funny?
Dame Lillard has played one all-star game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, especially in that position, saying somebody's going to be an all-star is pretty crazy. But it's funny that you mentioned Ricky Rubio, because Laker fans listening to this right now are going to say, it'd be great if he turned out to be Ricky Rubio, because he, for whatever reason, always kills the Lakers. Always.
Oh, yeah, he had a good night last night, too.
it's a weird thing.
I think the only team he shoots better than the Lakers is the Jazz. Yeah. And we took care of that problem.
I think the Lakers might have to trade for him just to take care of the same problem in the same way. Maybe we can clear him.
We'll take Lonzo Ball. I just said they're even. We're good.
What do you think about the stuff going on away from the court, though? Because that seems to be more of a focus. The LaVar Ball stuff seems to be more of a focus than Lonzo's game itself, which I find asinine.
I have not really digested it in a manner by which I've thought to analyze it. It doesn't seem like it's good, on the simplest terms, to have that type of spotlight put on you.
He was already going to have a spotlight. He was always going to play under the bright lights because he's a Laker. Like, it's a combination. So the theory I have is I think LaVar Ball, who has calmed down, like after he made the stay in your lane comment, he has not been as obnoxious. And I think he learned in that case, and he was absolutely wrong to say that. But I think he learned in that case that, okay, there is a line here. I got to toe that line. I can't go past that again. And so the people who are saying that they hate Lonzo Ball for LaVar Ball, they tend to be the people I've recognized who weren't going to like Lonzo anyway because he's a Laker. Like the Celtics fans saying that they don't like Lonzo Ball because of LaVar Ball is crazy to me. You weren't going to like him anyway because it's a Laker-Celtic thing. It's just weird.
I don't think it's helping him, but I'm also not one who thinks it's really going to impact his career, right? He's either going to be good enough or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of bad parenting situations, and they don't help.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen players get through them in their careers. I'd rather not mention who I'm talking about. I've seen some of them not get through them in their careers. And so it's true that parents can derail a career. And it's more often when the player, either the parents putting too much pressure and having a bad influence, or talking to the player too much. And that would be my concern, is mm-hmm. that there's too much, like, you need to have one voice coming at Lonzo. That's Luke Walton and his teammates. And then maybe in some circumstances, an agent and someone who's going to call you on your stuff, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's what's really, like, when you're out drinking and partying and you're not ready to play and it's beginning to impact you, you need somebody to say, like, dude, be a pro when you're a young kid, because every, you know, or hey, stop worrying about this and play. Or somebody who I've lost faith in myself because I'm shooting 34% and we're at the 20th game of the season, that you can talk to, is going to give you that positive feedback that helps you at that time. That's the outside voice you need. Too often I've seen the parent who is telling their kid they're so great and the coach sucks and that's why they're having a bad time, or ignoring because they're so dead set on making money themselves as the parent, they're ignoring the fact that their kid has gone off the rails and isn't willing to do anything to step in there and give the tough love to the kid when they need it. And then, you know, then there's, you know, there was a parent who sat in the front row at like every game and then would criticize the coach to the player every night. Like, okay, well, that's just anti-productive. Mm-hmm. And so that's the stuff. Arguing with Stephen A, I don't know if it bothers me, but I'd like to, you know, the one thing I guess on this, if it's a negative impact, is are those the areas where he's going to suddenly have an impact? You know, Robert Swift's a Southern California kid whose parents clearly had a negative impact on his career. I don't see LaVar Ball doing that. But that's the area. Like, is he going to be blaming Luke Walton when 20 games in the season Lonzo Ball is shooting 32%? Because Lonzo Ball is going to be shooting 32% 20 games in the season.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to happen.
Probably 80 games into the season, if we're being
right,
completely
honest.
Right,
yeah. I mean, like, rookies shoot below 40%, and I think he's going to be particularly low. I mean, the number that jumps out to me on him right now is the restricted area shooting, mm-hmm. which most rookies go through, but his is particularly bad. And that's always a little bit of a sign. Like, Kyle Kuzma's restricted area shooting should have you really, really, really excited about it. Because if you go look at the best restricted area shooters, they're always the most elite athletes in the game. And there's a chance that Lonzo Ball's not a good enough athlete to play inside 5 feet of the rim. And that's never going to change. And that would be an inhibitor for his future success.
The athleticism stuff, because you, I mean, the example, the counter example would be Steph and Kyrie, who aren't leapers by any extent, but he needs to learn how to utilize angles. And I think what I've noticed is, one, he's moving too fast. So he's moving too fast to especially elevate off of 1 foot. And two, the angles he attacks a basket with don't make much sense for somebody who isn't going to elevate over people. And that,
right, I mean,
that's something.
The Rubio comparison, Rubio's career at the rim is 47%,
mm-hmm.
which is really not good.
Yeah, and that's about where Lonzo is. Is he like the 40? What's that?
I think Lonzo's worse.
Yeah, because I saw that you put out the poll the other day on Twitter, and I think it was around either I want to say 45 or 47. I forget.
It was
what it
9
was.
Of 22 going into last night, and I think he was 0-for-2 last night around the rim.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he only had 3 field goals last night that were all threes.
Yeah, yeah. He's a Morey Ball kind of guy.
Yep.
You mentioned Kuzma. He's a Utah kid. Did you see much of Kuzma? Like, when you were, because he played at Utah, did you see this coming from Kuzma?
So the honest answer to that is no, I did not. Uh-huh. I'm so interested in the NBA. I don't watch much college.
Yeah.
I did not see him. But, boy, I mean, talk about looking the part,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything about him looks right. He's long. He's athletic. He's long around the basket. Everything about him looks right. And if you look at his three-point shooting right now, I think it's at 20-some-odd percent, but it's an above-the-break issue. He's 4 of 16 above the break going into last night. Around the rim, he's 15 of 19.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's a real find. He's you know, he's an NBA player, rotational player with a high possibility to be a starter. Though he's old, so his upward tick is not going to be as significant as some others.
Is he good enough? So the conversation out here has been mostly, all right, well, if Kuzma's going to be as good as he looks like he's going to be, you might have to move either Larry Nance Jr. or Julius Randle. Do you see that from Kuzma, or would you still hold on to Nance and Randle for as long as you possibly can?
Randle's growth in the last 2 years is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Nance's limited ability to coming in, he had a shot last night, but I think he's 4 of 16 outside the restricted area.
Mm-hmm. Won't shoot. Like, he does.
He shot 40% on long twos at a period of last year I had down in my notes.
Mm-hmm.
You can't play that position and not shoot and be 4 of 16 outside the restricted area.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on with that right now, but that's not a viable answer.
And the other concern, too, is that he isn't good enough defensively. It's one thing when you're a Roberson or any kind of – I mean, you have Cephalosha on your own Utah team. And if you're good enough on defense to make up for being actively bad on offense, that's one thing. But that isn't Nance. He hasn't improved enough defensively to warrant continuing to be out there on the court.
It didn't work last night, but I do think that Luke Walton speed lineup with Randle as your center is a pretty interesting idea.
Well, it's tough to work against Gobert.
Right. Well, it was interesting. I thought last night was a really interesting coaching game. Both coaches kind of went to what they went to. Joe Johnson was not playing well enough, I think, to give Quinn many other answers.
Mm-hmm.
But Luke stayed in with that speed lineup, which he went to Bogut for a little while. He committed his flagrant foul of the night. And then, which they didn't call, and unless he's got some weird twitch, he committed a flagrant foul. And then the Jazz stayed with Favors and Gobert to close. It was just interesting, right, to see the speed versus the size in that matchup.
Mm-hmm. I would say, generally speaking, in 2017, that speed lineup usually comes out on top, but against that type of size, against that player, Gobert, and because of how inexperienced the Lakers' speed lineup is, I didn't expect it to work last night, and it played out about as how I would have expected it.
It needs some better personnel around it, shooting-wise. Also, the Lakers were playing 3 games in 4 nights last night,
mm-hmm.
and the Jazz had 2 nights off, and I just, you know, the margin in the NBA between teams is pretty slim, and you know, you're talking about 450 best players in the world, and even the Lakers, who are going to win, you know, what, 25, 28 games this year or something, and you know, Phoenix, who's going to win 20 this year, and the Jazz, who are going to probably win somewhere between 35 and 40 this year, like, the margin on those three teams is pretty slim. So Phoenix has been home for 5 days. Jazz are playing their fifth game in 8 nights and their fourth game in 6 nights, and the Jazz look sluggish and miss a ton of shots, and the Lakers play the Jazz having played back-to-back in 2 games and 3 nights and 4 for the second time in a short period of time, I think it was. Well, then the Lakers look bad. Like, early in the season, particularly with this year, where there's some funky differences on how teams are starting scheduling, I think the schedule had a huge part of that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where I was interested to see the coverage of Utah after Hayward left. And a lot of people had them higher than I thought, than I anticipated. Where do you think that was coming from?
I didn't see that. so maybe you thought and where I thought they were are two different things.
No, okay.
And I don't I still I mean there's a so if the issue on the Jazz is if they're 20th in the league offensively, then they might win 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be 1, 2, or 3 defensively.
Mm-hmm.
If they're 25th in the league offensively, then they're going to really struggle. And I don't know where they are on that. Like they might not be. They might be 25th. In the first quarter of games right now, they're 30th, which is always something I look at very early. I love one of my number one indicators I watch early in seasons is what teams' offenses are in the first quarter of games.
Why is that?
Because it's everyone playing their best guys in their first primary rotation in the first 10 games of the season. I think it's a great indicator of who's got what and how good they are.
Huh. I mean, Walton, you probably wouldn't be a fan of watching Walton because he refuses to play the Lakers' best five players as starters. But, yeah, I mean, that makes sense as a theory. I could roll
And so, right now the Jazz are 30th in the league offensively and second in the league defensively with rating numbers that are just insane. If you follow that aspect of NBA, the league average offense is about 106, 107. Mm-hmm. The Jazz offensive rating is 83.
Oof.
Their defensive rating, the best in the league last year was the Spurs at about 100, is 86.7.
Dang.
Right? So... So
Kyrie Irving was...
So I have no idea. I mean, it's really interesting. I need 10 or 15 games to play around with this, but it's a fascinating way to look at the game and to see what's going on in those first quarters, because I also think early in the season when you're down 20 and you make a little comeback in the fourth quarter, it can really skew your numbers and you're irrelevant.
Huge.
So that's the other first quarter numbers.
Kyrie Irving was worried about the court he was playing on in Milwaukee, but we might have to check Utah's court for actual mud.
No, I mean, those numbers are just, it's Locked On Jazz on Monday, but it's those numbers are just incredible. A defensive rating of 86.7 is unheard of, only surpassed by the offensive rating is actually self-imposed, right? You're just not very good. The fact that you've played six different teams and have a combined defensive rating of 86.7 is actually far more remarkable than being that bad offensively.
Yeah, I mean,
Jazz have played good offense. Denver, Minnesota, Oklahoma City.
Yeah, those are good offensive teams. That's insane.
Right.
I mean, if Gobert doesn't win Defensive Player of the Year and those numbers continue, then what are we even voting on that award for?
He hasn't been great yet.
What's that?
He hasn't even been great yet.
Oh, he looked good against the Lakers.
Yeah, he was pretty good in that game.
Where do you think the Jazz go from here, though? Because my one concern is always the treadmill of mediocrity. Do you think the Jazz see where the growth comes from on this team? I mean, I think that the player who really needs to improve is probably Rodney Hood, right? Because Gobert is great. Rubio is Rubio at this point. And Hood is kind of the guy who needs to take a leap if Utah really is going to improve. And Devin and Mitchell. Mitchell is is going to improve.
It's either Dante Exum or Rodney Hood, and then Dante's out. So so it's probably it might be Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. We'll have to see on what Rodney's capable of doing with any consistent basis. The one thing I just think is interesting in all these conversations is so Minnesota and Denver, we talk about so positively, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, they ranked 29th in the league defensively, Denver did last year, and Minnesota was 25th. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're good offensively. The Jazz are the inverse of those teams.
Yeah.
And yet, we worry about all the things. Everyone's saying the same thing you are about. And I'm not sure what I think of that. If you're worried about the Jazz and where they're going, okay, but they have the most dominating defensive player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have a player that will always allow them to be elite defensively, then they should have a portion of their team that's always elite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then they should be all right.
I'm not really a big Michael Malone fan. I don't think he's – I mean, he had Jokic leading them to the best offense over, like, a 40-game span last year and decided that he's going to run his offense through Paul Millsap this year, which is kind of interesting. But I think it has a lot to do with people not really talking about defense the way they talk about offense. You know, they got the shiny toys Minnesota does, and they're, you know, Karl Anthony Towns looks great offensively, has been terrible defensively, and people just for whatever reason, and well, we know the reason, it's not shiny. People don't regard defense the way they regard offense.
We don't have analytics for it.
Mm-hmm. Last thing before we go here. Last time we talked, and for much of last season, the topic was Brandon Ingram and what he wasn't doing. What did you see from Ingram in Utah on Saturday night that, you know, if you want to draw a conclusion either way, which way would you go?
Well, I thought he showed three or four flashes that should really excite people, right? He got up and over Gobert on three drives to the basket. Like, that's – there's seven – players in the league that can do something of that nature. So that should have you pretty excited. My concern on Brandon Ingram his entire career has been this just like throwaway notion, well, he'll gain weight. Like, why do we know that? like he'll gain weight. Like, really? Because that body doesn't look to me like it's going to gain weight. Like, it's really slim.
Yeah. His shoulders especially are really narrow.
Right. So, I mean, I don't even know what I'm talking about, right? I don't have any idea. I'm not a medical. I don't have any knowledge of this at all. Mm-hmm. But it's just really interesting to me this whole entire time that everybody has ever talked about Brandon Ingram. Like, well, when he gains weight. Like, well, okay, but what happens if he doesn't? Like, then he's Anthony Randolph.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's a very old research project I did many years ago, but it's, and he's actually not had this problem yet, but it's worth keeping an eye on. If you're 6'10 and taller, and I guess he's listed at 6'9, so he might not classify, and you, but it fits.
Mm-hmm. It's
and
close
you
enough.
Weigh under 220. Or over 270, you can't stay healthy in this league.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or you just don't. So the big guys are Peck, Curry, Yao Ming. Shaq was the most healthy of any big guy ever.
And he had his slew of stuff too.
Right. And then you go to the skinny guys, Brad Sellers and Anthony Randolph, and I would just say this, like, go do a web search on. Like, I think Ingram's taller than 6'9", by the way. I know he's listed that, but he sure plays taller. Maybe it's just the arms. But just go do a search on 6'9", under 200.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys are there?
There aren't very many. He's really weird, especially in person. It really stands out when he's going up against other NBA guys, and they're grown men, and he just – him and Lonzo both look so slight out there. In Lonzo, I could see maybe putting on a little bit more weight. His shoulders are broader for his body than Ingram's are. But yeah, that's an interesting stat, and I bet the findings would make a ton of sense on that. In terms of skills and defensively, do you think he can put it together there, or do you think it just always comes back to the body?
Oh, he's still got a long way to go before I'm going to say no on that. I mean, I think there's a lot of good signs on him. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a bad rookie year. He's 19 years old. Who cares? But no, those dribble drives to the basket are real. That length is real. He seems like a good kid. That's real. His numbers at Duke were real. There's a lot of real when it comes to him. A lot of it.
And he has great taste in which podcasts to go on. So that's also
right.
Good.
No, I you know, I mean, could he be Scotty? You know, I think his upside is what? Scotty Pippen?
Yeah, I'd roll with that.
That's his upside. There's probably – but the only concern I have, and this is just – universal. Like, I always love this one. Like, when this is, I can try to think of a million examples, but like Kendall Marshall came out of UNC and everyone's like, oh, he's like Andre Miller. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me one other player that's like Andre Miller that's in this league.
Yeah.
And you can't find it, right? So when you can't find very many other comps for a player, like Andre Miller was really special. He's, you know, had his weaknesses and this and that, but he was really, really special in his ability to play at that size without speed, without athleticism. So find me the other 6'9", 195-pound guys, and then give me that listing. And when there's not many of them and there's not more than one comp, then I think you got to get a little, not nervous, but you have to just be a little realistic of what you're looking for.
Yeah, what you're hoping for. Absolutely. Well,
but this...
Go ahead.
Dante Exum's the same way. Dante may, you know, may never know or whatever. With that injuries, and maybe we'll still find out. Like every time I watch Dante and he still hasn't figured out how to be an NBA player, I was like, oh, I know why he's drafted fifth. Like every time I watch Brandon Ingram, there's no question to me why he's drafted second. That doesn't necessarily mean he becomes an NBA star. It's just there's no doubt why he should have been drafted second. Like no question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never. I mean, especially because people in his draft, that draft was abysmal. So it's not like they were stars in the making behind him.
Yes.
All right. Well, this was a ton of fun. You can check out, you guys, if you follow Locked On Lakers, I guarantee you listen to Locked On NBA and Locked On Jazz. David, thank you very much for hopping on with me. This was a lot of fun.
Great. Fun. We have a fun week coming up on we're doing our Locked On NBA this week is What Is Real. So we're checking in, I think, with Memphis, Orlando, and Detroit and seeing if any of what their starts are actually real. And then we have either the coach or a fun guest coming this week as well. So it should be good.
All right, everybody, if you listen to Locked On Lakers, make sure you keep an eye out for that because David does great work. I don't say this very often about people, but his analysis to me, I rarely disagree with David's analysis. So that's something to keep an eye out for.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Anytime.